This is Steve Cochran. Welcome to Live from My Office. And I hope you are well and the people you care about are well. And I am here to report to you that we have some good news. Is this light at the end of the tunnel? I don't know. But the next wave of vaccinations could be mathematically greater than we thought. The Johnson & Johnson company is about to enter the fray with reporting on their stage three test results, which will directly lead to emergency authorization use. And then you'll have Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and Pfizer all in the game with vaccines out there, which is why President Biden, in the past few days, depending on when you're hearing this, said that he believes we can get to possibly as much as 150 million people vaccinated in the first 100 days. And of course, we need that. One disturbing poll that popped out was that less than 50% of adult Americans said they are willing at this point to take the vaccine. That will not get us there. There's very, very few cases of people having problems with the vaccine anywhere in the world. Obviously, you don't want to be one of them. But the fact of the matter is, everybody's biochemistry is different. And if you are able to get the vaccine, I highly recommend you do it. And as soon as you're able to get in line, because that's how we'll get to that magical herd immunity of 70-75% of the nation actually being vaccinated and therefore immune to getting COVID and spreading COVID. That's the key. So when your number comes up to get the vaccine, please, please do it. Of course, in the meantime, there are hurdles to get over, one of which is there are con artists and creeps out there who are trying to take advantage of people. The folks at the Better Business Bureau, my old friend Steve Burness, sent a note out, and I think it's important that you know the details. Con artists have already impersonated the CDC and World Health Organization officials and phishing emails. They claim to have news about COVID, and they also claim to be able to inside track you to be able to jump the line, if you will, to get a vaccine, none of which is true. Another version of a scam offers vaccine shots for as low as $150 on apps and through email. You have to be careful of a few things. You have to know your region's plan for rolling out the vaccine in whatever stage it's in. It's a simple Google search away. Here's my zip code. When can I get the vaccine? What is the plan for my area? Research it carefully. Scammers are good. They're creative. Double check any information about the vaccine with official news sources. That's not OANNNNN or Newsmax or any of that nonsense. And we're talking about the major news organizations and the local channels. Check with your doctor. Call your doctor's office. Say, I had an offer by email. Should I go down this road for the vaccine? In all likelihood, your doctor's office is going to tell you absolutely not. Could well be a scam. Guard your government-issued numbers. Don't ever give up your Medicare ID number, your Social Security number, your health plan information or banking information to anybody you don't know or trust. And as a matter of fact, if somebody pitches you for that, if you end up on the phone with somebody who's saying, okay, I need your Social Security number, I need your Medicare number, just say, okay, I need your name and your phone number. I need to verify your identity, and then I'll call you right back. They will go away instantly if they're the criminals I think they are. And double check the URL, that's the internet address, to make sure it is actually legit. And you can do that by copy and pasting the URL, and then Google searching it and seeing what results come back. The Better Business Bureau is a great source, as always, BBB.org, to find out more of what they know about what they're finding out about the bad guys out there who are making it tougher for the rest of us. All right, today on Live from My Office, as always, sponsored by David Hochberg and Team Hochberg, two really good friends, one in Los Angeles, one in New York. Let's get some point of view perspective of what's going on in New York and LA from two people that live there. And of course, my perspective on Chicago is similar to most of yours, because most of you who listen are from the greater Chicago area. We'll talk a little bit about COVID. We'll talk a little bit about politics, and I'll introduce you to a couple of good friends that you may have heard before on the radio shows in the past. Patty Steele does the morning show in New York with the legendary Scott Shannon. WCBS FM. And my old friend Ed Mann, once a KISS FM Los Angeles disc jockey, and then a big shot businessman, starting his own podcast company. He's got an announcement, a world first announcement about a podcast coming up. I don't want to say what it is. I don't want to blow it, but it involves the Brady Bunch. And in addition to that, of course, we've got a charity we want you to help out with. I'll bring that up. And later in the week, Paul Coit will be back. Paul Coit will join us on Fridays live from my office. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Patty Steele from WCBS FM in New York, one of the greatest people in the world. Patty and I will talk it over in a moment. Thank you for listening to Live from My Office. If you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your existing home, do what we do, call Team Hochberg. For 20 years, David has built his business helping first responders and medical professionals with their mortgages and wanted to do more than just say thank you. Every week, Team Hochberg recognizes first responders and medical pros for keeping us safe and healthy. This week, Team Hochberg is recognizing Police Chief Robert Marshall, Deputy Chiefs Jason Harris and Bob Lee, and 177 police officers and 99 civilian support staff of the Naperville Police Department, one of the finest police departments in the country. I want to thank them and support family-owned restaurants in the process as well. Team Hochberg did it this way. They bought food from Little Pop's Pizza in Naperville, owned by Mike Nelson. First responders and medical pros deserve our appreciation, even if it's just buying them lunch. It's a cool thing to do. If you can afford it, do it. A family-owned restaurant of your choosing would certainly appreciate the business, and you'd be doing a great thing. Team Hochberg has helped me, it's helped my family, it's helped thousands of first responders, medical pros, radio listeners as well. They can't help you if you don't call, because all they want to do is save your money. Call them at 855-56-DAVID. That's 855-56-DAVID. Or go to 56david.com. Homeside Financial is an equal housing lender. NMLS number 1124061. Well, amongst all the cheap thrills I've enjoyed in show business, this one is mine, not hers. It's the talented and lovely Patty Steele joining me from New York as we continue on Live from My Office. How are you?
I am dandy, and I have decided that I'm going to put you simultaneously on my podcast.
Wow. So we're doing that right now. I'm on News on the Rocks, and you're on Live from My Office.
Exactly. And the main reason I wanted to also make it News on the Rocks is because that allows me to drink while we do that.
Right. Yes. And after the morning show there on CBS FM, many days, I'm sure you've had to.
Oh, you betcha. Maybe even during it.
By the way, last time you saw me, I had not gone with a shaved head, but I know that you're fighting the desire to hop on a plane and come to Chicago and just rub it for luck. So let me do that for you.
No, not just for luck.
And this, by the way, this new part of the look is.
I saw that. I have some facility with the internet, so I actually saw
pictures. Yeah, I call this the distraction.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Let's go. Oh, look, he's got a goatee. Funny story though about shaving your head. You know, as you know, because we've been friends for so long. I have an exceptional sized melon. You know, I'm in the large melon hall of fame. And when you shave your head, you just don't know, right? You don't know. I mean, what's up there? What's under what little hair you have left? So it comes out and it's reasonably proportioned. And I sort of have what I consider to be anyway, the badass mobster guy look now. So this all sort of was working for me. So a good friend of mine, sees a picture right after I shaved my head and we were talking and she goes, by the way, I saw that you shaved your head. And I said, yeah, what do you think? She goes, well, now you know.
Oh my God. What does that mean?
Well, now you know to me meant not her favorite look.
Right. Well, you do know that I had breast cancer like 6 years ago.
Right.
And one of the many wonderful benefits of that was losing my hair. And so it was really funny because as that was beginning to happen, I got like really freaked out and I started to cry. And my daughter walks in and she goes, actually, I think this could be really cool, Mom. You have a beautiful face. Now let's see what your head looks like. And it was like, yeah, you know what? Let's just own this. And when I went in, my hairdresser was very sweet. She opened up her shop on a Sunday so that it was just us there, and took the rest of this. I always say it turned into like a hair yarmulke because it was curly. So it would all mix together and right. They came out on my head and it was like prickly. So she took that all off and she went, wow, you really have a good head. So I turned around and I
thank
went,
you.
Hey, and I kind of liked it. You know why? My favorite thing is I could take a bath and I could just sink under the water, pop out and just dry my head.
Welcome to the world of the 59-year-old man. Huh? That's what I'm saying. You know, I look at combs and I go, what are these things you're calling combs? That's not part of my world anymore.
Yeah, well, it's back, you know, for better or for worse, mine is back. Although I have to say a cousin of mine looked at a photo that we had in a frame for some reason of me. And he went, oh my gosh, you are having a great hair day there. And it was a wig. I just went, thanks a lot.
Whatever it takes. I think you look fantastic. But then again, you know, I've had the big crush for years.
This is kind of what it is. So,
all right. I got to ask you a couple of professional things here and related to living in New York, because the premise of this is I'm in Chicago. You're in New York. Our friend Ed Mann, who you'll remember from Premier Radio days. And he started his own podcast company. I don't know. I was talking to Ed about L.A., and my premise is this. There's a perspective on America's three largest cities that they're all liberal bastions of people who want to be given everything for free. And there's nothing but a bunch of left-wing nut jobs there, and they're ruining America. You know, nothing could be further from the truth in Chicago and New York and L.A., but it helps to get POV from where you are. So let me start with COVID. What is the New York situation from a COVID standpoint as you see it now on, you know, the biggest morning show in New York?
Well, you know, certainly one of the most difficult things and heartbreaking things for me is so much of the city. If you take a drive through, which I do from time to time, it is much deader than they would have you think, because obviously the idea is to make it seem like it's still got a heartbeat, which it does, but it's crazy. I mean, they just cut down again the hours on MTA, the subway and buses, to 25% of normal, because that's 25% of the people are the only ones that are riding. And you've got, of course, one, arguably two of the worst hit sections of the city, of course, are restaurants and hotels. They just said right. One third of all hotel rooms, that's 42,000 hotel rooms, are gone in New York City. All these wonderful little restaurants, which are always my favorite. One of my favorite things about working in the city is to be able to pop out and walk to all these cool little, I work in Soho, but I can walk down to Tribeca. I can walk up to the West Village, all these
sure.
little, you know, wonderful little restaurants and bakeries and all these things. And, you know, so many of them are gone. And will they return? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how they return after that long being shut.
Well, that's the backbreaker, right? Because it's Chicago, as you know, is a great restaurant city, and the same sort of hit that's gone on there goes on here. And the mom and pop boutique places,
yeah,
they're the ones that go because they don't have corporate backing.
Right.
And they are the foundation of the neighborhoods they're in.
100%.
So then what happens to the neighborhoods? That's the concern too.
Right, right. You look at, you know, everybody knows Broadway shut down, but think of all the little businesses that make their living off of both the tourism and the locals who come to the theater. It's not just the restaurants. It's the little shops. It's all these little spaces, little places that people hit before or after the theater. Those are gone, you know. And
Broadway, if correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking maybe June before Broadway's back up, depending on the vaccines.
Then I know that they were talking about, I think the first show to come back is going to be Hamilton. At least that's what they were saying. And they were talking about bringing that back around the 4th of July. But that was several months ago. And now, you know, everything is so crazy with the shortage of the vaccine. I mean, New York State, they were talking about this morning. New York State gets right now 250,000 doses a week for the entire state. But you got to remember, everybody gets two doses. So that's really only 125,000 right. people in a, right. this massive state. Now they're going to up it to 290,000 a week, which, you know, it's going to take probably, they're saying, until autumn before there is a sense that everybody is vaccinated, that is eligible for it. It was funny, in New Jersey, they only get like 100 and I think with the new bump, they're going to get like 116,000 doses a week. And the governor said, well, we're hoping to have 4.8 million people vaccinated in the next 6 months. And I'm like, you better do your math there, buddy. It's more like a year and a half at the rate that we're getting doses. Right. They had a thing yesterday. They hired 250 people to answer a phone lines in New Jersey because they discovered that an awful lot of people that can get the vaccine are elderly and don't use the internet. And so they set up a phone line with 250 people to answer those phone lines. Well, the thing crashed almost immediately upon opening, and everybody calling in, tens of thousands of people, got a message that said, please book your vaccine on the internet. It's like the whole idea of the phone line was so that you didn't have to use
it. Yeah, well, that's like calling IT because your computer's down and they're saying, well, please go on the internet and send us a message, right? It just doesn't work. So this is the problem I have with our governor here, who I think has largely done a decent job of handling this, but certainly Cuomo has been the good guy and the bad guy through this as well. And everybody, as you reinvent the wheel and something we'd never seen before, maybe gets a little bit of a break in how they handled things. But there's no time to go, we got your back, pal. We know you're trying hard. You can't make mistakes. You got to plow through this as fast as you can. And the idea that anybody would have been dependent on the accident that was Donald Trump right. and not have some sort of infrastructure set up, ready to go, is crazy to me. And I'm still not seeing that. I don't know, you tell me about New York, but in Illinois, the ability to get the vaccines that come in distributed immediately, they're still struggling with that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They set up in New York, they set up these mega sites at both Citi Field, and they were getting ready to open one at Yankee Stadium. They shut them both down because they don't have any vaccine. So it's like they had all of this set up, these ideas, and it took them a full month to get those ideas up and roll. I mean, Yankee Stadium never even opened. It took them a long time to get that up and running. And then all of a sudden, everybody's going, "Ooh, gosh, we don't have the vaccine to inject, so you can stand in line all you want, but you're not going to get it."
Right.
And it's weird because you do ask yourself, everything shut down in March of last year. So we're going on a year. And we knew that the vaccines were being developed, and that's certainly what took so much time. Wasn't anybody thinking, okay, we have X number of months. Let's put a plan in place for how this is going to get
exactly.
What happened to that? I mean, I get the guy I work with saying to him, well, I don't understand why they can't make more. And I said, well, it's, you know, this is a living thing, this bacteria that they're making the vaccine. So it takes a long time. You know, one batch will take up to 6 weeks, and maybe only you'll get a couple thousand doses out of it, and everybody needs to. So it takes a lot of time. But you would think that other than just trying to get that together, that just the distribution part of it would have been figured out. I mean,
even if you had a plan that's sitting on somebody's desk that never gets put into play, you had to have a plan. You know, you had to have a plan. And the markings are there. And history will tell us whether or not it's a fair judgment or not. But we know what we know. And what we know right now is shots are not going in people's arms nearly fast enough. However, here's the upside, in my opinion. There could not be a better person in the White House, and I mean person in character and desire, than Joe Biden. He wants to get this done. He is trying to set up the infrastructure to get this done. He doesn't need the credit for everything that happens throughout the day. So I think with the power the United States has, we have a shot to get this right as fast as possible. But a lot of people are going to die between now and then. And it didn't have to be this way.
It didn't have to be this way. And it's disturbing. But, you know, it's funny. And this is not a political statement, because wasn't a huge Biden fan? Wasn't a huge Trump fan?
What? Really?
But the point is, what we needed happened on the inauguration. There was this calm sort of presence, this calm sense of, okay, we don't have necessarily all the answers, but we're going to damn sure try to figure them out and move forward. And
make it priority number one. The difference now is priority number one is not the president of the United States. Priority number one is what the president of the United States can do with the power of the presidency to do good.
Right.
That's the way the job's supposed to work.
And just kind of calm us down a little bit. We've been through a long period of setting our hair on fire. And now we kind of are in this place where, you know, may not make all the right decisions. It may take longer than we'd like. More people may die, but at least there is this calm sort of sense and we're moving forward. And I think that's a good thing. No matter your politics, I think it's a good thing.
I think Americans come together in times of trouble, maybe better than anywhere else in the world. What do I have to measure it by? I live here. After 9/11, New Yorkers, there was nobody stronger than New Yorkers. How has New York, I know a lot of people have left town, as you said, and businesses have closed, but have New Yorkers come together through this, or is this rip that's going on throughout the country affecting New York as well?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because there is the, I'm staying put, nothing's going to get me out of my city kind of mentality. And then there are the hundreds of thousands who fled for everything from their house in the Hamptons to Florida to just someplace that got them out of the cauldron that is New York City. So there is a little bit of this division among the people that grabbed their kids and left because they had the means to do it, and the people who stayed put, even if they did have the means to leave, but stayed put because they were going to fight through it. So that's the one thing. I see a little division there. I see certainly a lot of people really wanting to do everything they can to support the restaurants and the hotels and the bars and things like that. But even there's some division. You know, you see restaurants where they invite people in and they say, you don't have to wear masks here. Come on in. We're going to party. We're going to pretend nothing ever happened. And so there's a big battle between those people and the people who are trying to be more careful. And, but I mean, that's New York. That's any big city. You have that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
But I think at the end of the day, I've been in to eat at some restaurants that I love that are open all outdoors. Obviously there's no indoor dining in New York, even in the snow. And there is,
I don't want to picture you with a chair and a table sitting on the street. Are they heated tents? Is that what they're doing?
Well, they had like one place that I went had like individual little kind of cubicle type things with plastic in between each cubicle and like basically a picnic bench inside. Now this was in September when it was a cool night, but not a cold night by any means.
Right.
Then I went more recently to in the West Village. I went to this great little restaurant where they had some of those igloos, but I actually only sat under a kind of an overhang, and they had like the really intense garden heaters, you know, and it was fine. And I had one other time, I haven't sat, I mean, they were open for a short amount of time, but I haven't eaten indoors even when there was an opportunity to, but that's kind of what it is. The igloo things, those plastic igloo things are a hot commodity here, but
yeah, well, I should have invested. You know, all this, of course, ties back into politics, whether we like it or not.
Right.
And it's interesting because I've been meaning to call you off the air about this several times, because You and I have crossed paths with Donald Trump through the years on multiple occasions, and Rudy Giuliani as well.
Right.
In 2016, when all this happened, I was screaming at people. I go, "You have no idea what's coming here. You don't understand. The guy on TV, the Apprentice guy, that's who he is. That's who he was in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. That's who he is now.
Really?
He doesn't know about policy. Doesn't care about policy. He's a great talk show guest because he's kooky and nuts. He's not the president of the United States. And it played out that way in really destructive ways. But it's almost more surprising. The fall of Rudy Giuliani is just so bizarre. Yeah.
I mean, you think of him post 9/11,
right?
Every firefighter funeral, him saying, you know, I'll never forget that moment when someone asked him at a news conference how many people had died in the World Trade Center. And he said, "I'm not going to put a number on it. I will just tell you it's more than we can bear."
Right.
And I thought, wow, what an incredible sensibility. And, you know, obviously there were a lot of people calling for him to run for president. And then it was like, wow, everything kind of just collapsed around him, even to the point where Trump is trying to figure out a way not to pay him for his legal help. You know, and unlike you, I will say that I think there are things that Donald Trump did pre-pandemic that I think were good for the country in on many levels. And I think it was reflected in everything from, you know, jobless numbers to, I mean, he had in this last election, he had almost double the support of minorities that he had the last time, and more than any president in like 60 years. Any Republican president.
Right.
And I think that there were things he did. The problem is you have to get to a point where you say, this is, everything here is bigger than me. And I don't think he has the ability to say anything is bigger than him. And so that was his Achilles heel, I think, in all of this. And
well, that and also a complicit mess of a Congress. You know, I'll say it for the 9 millionth time. The far right and the far left are the problem. They're not the solution.
No,
and 100%. The rest of us live closer to the middle. Maybe we lean a little right. Maybe we lean a little left. But we're closer to the middle, and people want to get stuff done. And okay, That's what this has to be now.
There's this kind of weird thing that goes on now on the far left and the far right. Maybe it did before, but they didn't have as loud a voice, that basically says, if you are willing to compromise, you're really messed up. You have a problem. You are not holding true to your ideology if you're willing to compromise at all. And the problem with that is, no matter what anybody else wants to say, there was upper 40% of Americans that still voted for him this time. And if you're going to get anything done without some sensibility, Joe Biden was the picture of understanding compromise throughout his career. He made deals, and he actually almost lost the primaries because of it, because all of these far left the AOCs of the world were saying, you know, he was compromising with people that did X, Y, and Z. And they, as though that was a bad thing, that trying to get things done by understanding, okay, we give a little here, we take a little here. And you know, unless we find a way to separate this country into two separate countries, that's the only way we're going to survive, is if we...
But you hit on it with Biden. That's the encouraging thing about Biden. He said it a million times. I want to be the president for you, whether you voted for me or not, because that's what the president of the United States is. You're not the president of the Democrats. You're not the president of the Republicans. You're the president of the United States.
Exactly. And I think we have a chance, I'm hoping, with him, for that to play out in a healthy way. I just think we're in such a terrible place. It's going to take a while. I mean, they were saying today, you know, regarding like the problem with hotels in New York, they think it'll be at least 2025 before the hotels in New York kind of regain their health and their ability to move forward in a productive way. And that's really scary. How do you
I mean, think about the tourist economy that New York is dependent on, Chicago and LA as well, obviously. Yeah. There's a lot more pain to come in that regard. So how does the government help? What's fair? You know, there's a lot to figure out, but it doesn't get figured out by all of us just going, oh, no, 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 I'm right, you're wrong.
Right.
Unless you agree with me, then you're right.
Right.
I mean, that's got to stop.
As long as what you say agrees with what I say.
Well, look, you're a great mom. I think I'm a pretty decent dad through the years, and now I'm a grandfather. Did I send you a picture of the grandkids, by the way? I think you may have one coming.
Maybe. How could you be a grandpa?
Yeah, it's crazy at my young age. But the thing is, it's the same thing we'd say to our kids. You know, you sit down and you go, okay, I understand you feel that way, but how do you think this is going to end? Because you can want that all day long and you can insist on that all day long, but let's talk about how it gets there. I don't understand the wall that people run into. It's like, okay, I want it my way. It's going to be my way. And that's it. Life doesn't work that way.
Yeah, no, 100%. One of my kids, for a brief period of time, went to one of these sort of outdoors kind of places to like zhuzh up your sensibilities. I don't know what you call them. It's and this place was called Anasazi, and it's run by Native Americans in Arizona who are absolutely wonderful. And one of the things I remember at the kind of parents thing where they were talking about speaking with our kids, you know, when they come out of this wilderness experience. And one of the guys there, I won't name names, said, you know, sometimes you just want to be the dad. You want to be able to say you're going to do it because that's what I want you to do. And you're not allowed to question me about it. And I remember this guy, this wonderful old guy that runs this place. He looked at him and just said, how's that working for you? The whole thing. You can tell somebody, this is the way you're going to do it. And because you're
right.
Of everything, their livelihood and everything else, they're going to go, okay, yeah, sure. And the minute you're out of sight, they're going to do it exactly the other way because they're going to show you, I'm a man.
Right.
I'm a 16-year-old man. I know what.
And right.
But when you say to them, let's talk about this. Let's
right.
play this out. What's the end game here? Let's kind of see where you're going. And you can understand through a little more experience where I'm coming from, and we can talk this out. You begin to help them to say, huh, now I understand what you're saying. It doesn't mean they're going to be perfect all the time, but
sure.
Now I understand why you're saying what you're saying, as opposed to just saying you do it because I told you to do it.
And well, that's the compromise thing. Compromise isn't a dirty word. Compromise is an absolute necessity.
That's politics, and that's how it should be. But, you know, we'll see if we can get back to that. There's a lot of loudness coming from both ends of the spectrum, and that's, you know, what is scary about it, because with all of the access to microphones that everybody has, you if you can be as loud as possible, you can, and as clever as possible, you can shut people down. You know, you can be incredibly mean and have everybody go, wow, they're really tough, when in fact what you're doing makes no sense. And so that's what I'm hoping will
rule the day. Yeah, it's not professional wrestling, kids. It's life. It's not a TV show. It's life. And it's never been more important for all of us to grow up and treat it that way. We're going to run out of time quickly here, but before we do, let's go with the cheap show business plugs before I bring up something really important to both of us. For my audience, you can hear Patty Steele every morning on CBS FM, online, everywhere. Is it iHeart? Probably the best way to go?
Probably not, since it's Intercom Communications.
Oh, pardon me. You know, you lose track once you've been thrown out of radio. It's Intercom. That's my point. So everywhere radio stations are shared outside of those creeps at iHeart.
Right. It's WCBSFM.com or radio.com. That's where you can hear
there you go.
The radio show. And you can hear my podcast, which this will be on, at either through radio.com, WCBSFM.com, or at pattysteele.com.
Okay, excellent. And live from my office for your audience is on Apple and Spotify and Cochran show.com, C-O-C-H-R-A-N show.com. and everywhere. So I hope people will check that out as well. And I just want to say it's just beyond great to talk to you. I've missed you.
I miss you too, my sweetheart. Can I ask you one or two questions real quick?
Yeah, and then I do want to bring something around to both of us that we can wrap with. But go ahead.
Put this together. First of all, I was going to ask you, what's the stuff that you're going to miss when you have to go back to work in a separate building?
If I go back to work, because my situation's unique, right? Because I don't know that I could be thrown out of too many more places. I thought I would never be able to work at home. And this live from my office concept was kind of a goof because I never had the discipline, because I'm a guy that would be having something to do. And I'd go, oh, look, it's a Green Acres rerun I want to catch, you know, because there was something shiny. So the discipline of going somewhere to work mattered. I miss people. I miss interacting with people. And I didn't even know I liked people that much. Now, the question is still out, do they like me? But I'm actually looking forward to returning to the world of people.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of my, it's funny because I made a list of the stuff that I miss about work. It was the creative atmosphere, but it was not just my friends, but also just people on the street.
100%.
The doorman in my building in Soho, you know, getting out of the house, that kind of is a thing that I miss for some reason. And of course, the museums and theaters and that kind of stuff. But there are things that I am going to miss when I go back to work. I made a joke with you about how, I had to wash my hair before this because I had to wash it every 3 months. Not true, but maybe once a week. I'm going to miss not having to worry about what the back of my head looks like because nobody sees it. I'm going to miss not having to wear a bra every day.
Me too. Same.
I'm going to miss the fact that the only shoes I've worn for the last year were slippers, UGG boots, which I have on now because my feet were cold, flip-flops, and Birkenstocks. So nothing that supported my poor little feet or that gave me any height. So I have remained at 5 feet tall for the last year. And I guess driving into the city at 4:30 in the morning and missing the extra sleep I'll miss, but...
Well, there's no question about that, but what you're talking about, I get it. Even as a dude who has worn sweatpants for 364 of the last 365 days, I now actually enjoy putting on grown man pants. You know, I'll throw on some jeans or I'll throw on a pair of, khakis or whatever. And I go, well, look at me, all dressed up like an adult.
You know, what's funny is I get dressed every morning, because the first couple of weeks that I did this working from home, I would go down in my big fuzzy pink bathrobe to the basement, my luxurious studio in the basement. And I just found that I wasn't like snapping to, I wasn't like on top of my game. So I get up every morning, a full hour and a half before I go on the air, and I do the whole, I get dressed. Only thing I don't do is wear a bra or put on shoes, but I fix my hair, I put on makeup, and then I go downstairs and I make coffee and I write until I have to go on.
It gets you in a groove, right? It ramps you up.
It's, 5:25 when I first go on and I'm awake, I'm ready to go. And I
And what was the other, you said you had two questions. What was the other one you were going to ask me?
I don't know. I think that was kind of...
That was the main one? All right. So here's the thing I wanted to bring up to you, because you and I have a passion about mental health. Yeah. We have people that we love who have struggled. We have been very open on public forums about our own struggles, whatever they be. I've had clinical depression my whole life. And this is such a tough time for people. So I just want people to hear it. The same thing you say all the time and I say all the time, but to hear it again, there's always somebody out there for you. There's resources everywhere. And when you find yourself in a room where it's getting dark, get out of the room. You know, I tell my son is struggling with some funky feelings now. And, some of it's COVID related and things, but the point is just do one thing. It's the greatest tip I ever got. Don't allow your mind to lock in on whatever sad thing you're locked into for more than a few minutes and accomplish one thing. Whatever the one thing is, it doesn't matter what it is. Just do one thing, and that puts one foot in front of the other, breaks the cycle, and moves you forward. It's a minor tip. It may not work for you, but I'm recommending it.
Yeah, no, when I went through I was going through breast cancer at the same time that I discovered my son's very severe opiate addiction, literally as I was beginning chemotherapy. And and that is enough to kind of knock you off your...
Yeah, a little bit.
And one of the things that really helped me to organize my mind was I, on my phone, and they're there to this day, I have a space where I have a list of affirmations. And those affirmations, you know, you allow yourself to recognize what the pain is, but the more you dwell on it, the more you sink in. Yep. And what I found was, okay, I'll allow myself to think about this and all the scary possibilities, but now I need to clear my head so that I can be of use to myself, my children, my work, my life. And this list of affirmations, I would sometimes lie in bed in the middle of the night and I would go over them. And almost, it's sort of like that moment when somebody says, okay, for the next 15 seconds, don't think about elephants. And all you can think about is elephants. But if you start thinking about every other animal, turkeys, chickens, bears, dogs, cats, sure, you drive that out of your mind. And it's not like you're forgetting what you're dealing with, but you're giving yourself a moment to just breathe and to recognize that there are other things in the world. And there are certainly, as you said, people out there who love you and want to help you. I mean, I found that I mean by people that love me, total strangers who took my hand and guided me through in both cases, both what my son was going through and what I was going through at the same time. So I think that's a little bit of help. I don't know.
Well, and it's, you have to find what works for you, but I think those are two really good, simple things. And I'll ask you to send me that list of affirmations if you don't mind, and I'll post it to my website because people could certainly use that as well.
One of my very favorite things on that list is just a little kind of quote from Albert Camus. And basically what he said was, and I'm going to find it here because I've got a ton of stuff on this. In the midst of winter, I found there was within me an invincible summer. And I realized that you take these moments where things seem just so down and so irreversible.
Right.
Realize that you have it within you. We all do. We have it within us to grab that place within that we can find some peace. And we don't allow that summer to be taken away from us.
It's a great line. It's a great thought. It's a great way of encompassing it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I think it's important for people to hear from you and I is something else I know we both believe in, and that is your sadness, your depression, your darkness, whatever it is in your life, doesn't mean there's something so wrong with you, you're irretrievable. And it doesn't mean it's fixable by someone coming up to you and saying, snap out of it. You've got so much good going on in your life. We need to recognize in this country that mental illness in any form, and I certainly have admitted my own mental illness, it's as serious as cancer and heart disease and everything else. So let's start treating it fairly like that and respecting it, as opposed to treating people who are willing to admit it like there's something desperately wrong with them that they have chosen not to fix.
We wouldn't shun people with heart disease or cancer. Why shun people who need our love and support and answers? We don't give enough to the fight against mental illness and addiction in this country at anything near the rate that we give to other illnesses. And yet, arguably, it is the worst scourge in the country when it comes to. And
everybody's dealing with it. Everybody. But I can, you know, look, it's tough as these times are. I'm as optimistic as I've been in a long time, because I believe, and I don't know who originally brought this quote up, but I believe in it. Sounds a little hokey, but there's nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed by what's right with America. And I just think that's true.
I love that. I love that. That makes me feel good. That makes me feel good.
All right, come here. Give me a hug. Reaching out all the way from Chicago to New York and back. So, all the best with News on the Rocks. And thank you for being on Live from My Office.
I love it.
If you or a family member is interested in securing a reverse mortgage loan, listen to the amazing facts from Team Hochberg. They go like this. Fact, at least one homeowner has to be at least 62. Fact, the homeowner retains ownership of their home just as they own their home before securing that reverse mortgage. Fact, money extracted from the home is tax-free. Fact, the home can stay in the family upon the passing of the homeowner or the sale of the home if a family member can qualify for a mortgage. Fact, reverse mortgage loans are non-recourse loans, which means neither the borrower nor any family member is responsible for any loss upon the sale of the home. If you'd like more information and help figuring this stuff out, find out about one of the coolest financial mechanisms to be created in the last generation. It's reverse mortgages. Nobody does them better or knows more about them than David Hochberg. Call the experts at Team Hochberg now at 855-56-DAVID or 56david.com. Team Hochberg has helped me as well as thousands of my podcast listeners, but they can't help you if you don't call. 855-56-DAVID is 855-563-2843 or go to 56david.com and tune in to Home Sweet Home Chicago, hosted by David Hochberg, Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. on WGN. Homeside Financial and Equal Housing Lender, NMLS number 1124061. All right, it's my friend Ed Mann. By the way, author Ed Mann. I'll get to that in a second. But Ed and I have a radio pass that connects over 30-plus years and been friends forever. And it's great to have you back on Live from My Office. Hello, buddy.
Hey, man. How are you? It's good to be here. It really is.
I'm doing just fine. And I'm doing something today on Live from My Office, which I think I'm overdue in doing. You know, we always hear reports of what it's like in L.A. or what it's like in New York or what it's like in Chicago. Today, I'm talking to you, and I'm talking to Patty Steele, who I worked with at Z100.
Oh, love Patty Steele. Sure.
And Patty works with Scott Shannon now on CBS FM to get a little coast-to-coast perspective on the world we're living in. So let me start with COVID. California has been hammered. I assume everybody in your family is okay, just to start with the smallest circle?
We are. Everyone's pretty much fine. We had a scare. Mindy's mother-in-law actually got a touch of it, and she is over it. Got over it pretty quickly. Yeah, we're good. The rest of our immediate family is fine.
So when you think of L.A., where you have lived forever, show business essentially got shut down by COVID. How much of show business is reopened? In other words, production, is it happening on a big deal scale now?
It's scaled back up. Yeah. They're very careful about it. There was that famous Tom Cruise episode where he started screaming and yelling at the crew. I think most people have heard that one. He wasn't entirely wrong. It's just the way he handled it, you know, it was pretty crazy, but, follow the guidelines, you know, follow the guidelines and then they won't shut us down. He was scared to death for all the people in the crew that were not following the guidelines because they, you know, they could lose their homes. They could make their payments. So yeah, the guidelines are there. Production is slow. Funny you should look at the trailers of some of the CBS shows I saw, and you can see the acrylic, you know, with separators between the actors.
Right.
Signs in the camera. It's like, oh, this is going to look funny 10 years from now. But they have to be careful. It's so easy to catch this thing. It's so easy.
So yeah, there's a lot of really talented people who worked regularly who aren't working anymore. I mean, of the folks you're in touch with, the impact has got to be amazing. I have a friend who was a regular character actor on a number of shows who hasn't worked in over a year. I think most people don't understand, regular working actors are not multimillionaires. You know, if they pop onto a bunch of shows, a lot of them are making union scale and things. So, I mean, it's really has to have hammered LA, not to mention, if you want to talk about a restaurant scene, everything in business gets done in LA at either lunch or dinner. So the impact's got to be crazy.
The impact's horrible. And this is not just Los Angeles. This is around the country. I mean, everything's shut down in so many different places. It's one thing to complain about actors. And like you said, most of them, rank and file, 80, 90% of them are just working guys and girls and just doing what they do and trying to make a living. It's only the few that, you know, make the big money and they're not going anywhere. But the The other element of it is live performances too. And this is an area that you're intimately, you know, close to, is stand-up comedy. I mean, that's just stopped. The clubs right. are totally closed. They've opened up some parking lots to do some of these things. But my wife, Mindy Rickles, is a local comic. In fact, her career was really on the ascent about a year ago. And everything just stopped. You know, I mean, she had two or three improv gigs ready to go, one in Vegas. You know, she's been to the Midwest a number of times. It just stopped. So it's really disconcerting. And I'm worried about the club owners and yep. their staffs and, you know, everybody. It's just all of it's just horrendous. And music, too. I love to perform. And that's out. You know, there's just no performance for music whatsoever.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you, as an accomplished jazz musician forever, when was the last time you played live?
It's been March 9th. I remember wow. exactly. Yeah, wow. It's been a while, and I really miss it. It's so much fun. You know, what are you going to do? You just stay at home. I practice every once in a while when I think about it and do what I do. And I'm lucky enough to be in a business that's still working and fairly, you know, doing fairly well, radio and now podcasting as well. So it's, you just got to stay busy and figure it out.
You know, the thing that is, and you just sort of referenced it, the thing that's most striking about this is the horrific nature of what COVID's done to this country and lost lives, obviously in the economy to follow, which is less important, but still vitally important. And it's just a slow moving disaster. It's like watching the Titanic sink if it took a year. And I don't know if that's...
It wasn't so slow moving in March or April when everything shut down completely throughout the right. world. And they had the...
But is there a weirdness? Like, there's a sense that we've gotten used to it on some level. Not that anyone wants it or likes it, but the urgency to get over it is finally there with the Biden folks. Now, the question is, how big a hole do they have to dig out of?
It's a big one. The pandemic would have been, I believe, and I think it's general consensus, far less... dramatically bad had Trump not just, you know, acted like a fool. Literally, a few words would have done it. Put on a mask.
Yep.
And he wouldn't do it. He turned it into a political football. And I don't want to get political with it, but it's just not politics. It was a matter of just what he wanted to say and do because he felt that his crowd didn't care. It was a weird deal. It's like he got word that freedom of your mouth not being covered was more important than not getting a deadly disease. I didn't get it. I still don't. But I think Biden, yeah, has an opportunity here to turn that around. The numbers in California are now coming down, and that's good news.
Are you able to go to restaurants and things? I mean, we're at Chicago. We're at 25%, and that's just in the last week.
Yeah, they're. I don't know when this podcast is gonna drop, but as of the end of January. LA County will open up restaurants for outdoor dining. So that's good. And that's great for all the people that have to do it. There was actually some anecdotal evidence, if not some empirical evidence, that stopping outdoor dining was deleterious to this thing, that people were going back indoors and having multiple families, you know, for dinner.
Right.
And, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas and Hanukkah became nightmare spreaders.
And, yeah, I hadn't thought about it. It makes total sense though, doesn't it?
Yeah. So if you can get back outdoors in a proper setting with lots of distance, put your mask on and, you know, as often as you can while you're eating. Yeah. I think you have a better chance of getting past this thing than sitting at home with a bunch of people coming over, breathing in your face. It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because your climate is you can do this year round as opposed to New York and Chicago. But having said that, LA also is a tourism city, 365. You guys
were crushed by this. Yeah, I mean, a couple of things on that one. First of all, it was 24 degrees here in the valley this morning, so I'm not so sure if outdoor dining works at 6 a.m.
You know what? I'd switch the camera around for you to show you the 6 inches of snow we got last night, but you know the drill.
I know the drill. We don't get the snow, but we get the cold. Seriously, yeah, we have better weather out here, generally speaking, and there's more opportunities for outdoor dining. But I really feel for people in the Midwest and back East. It just is Canada. I mean, it's cold. You can't go outside and eat, so... It's a shame. The whole thing is a mess, but hopefully this vaccine is going to kick in and I think we'll all be okay. I really believe it.
I have drummed into the heads of folks in Washington that I deal with and political guests and things that this country has never been more towards the middle than now. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. I've never been more independent than now. And the majority of America wants people to figure it out and to get things done. LA always gets written off like Chicago gets written off is it's nothing but blue. It's all Democrats. You know, they want is the far left. You know, straighten people out. People in LA are all not bubble-headed multi-millionaires with seven layers of protection. It's not about the label. It's about what the people want, and people just want to be able to live their lives, right?
I think so, yeah. I think people want that kind of freedom, and that's universal. And that's one of the things I think Trump picked up on and said, well, my crowd just wants to be free. And it's like, well, everyone wants to be free, man, but you got to let your brain get in the way of that for a minute and go,
There lies the problem. You said brain and Trump in the same sentence.
Yeah, like you said, we're going to find a consensus. There's going to be some stuff in the middle that I think is going to be really attractive to everybody. And while I am a Democrat, I like to think of myself as, you know, for the most part, a centrist with liberal leaning. I just really feel that liberalism is not a bad word.
Now, a couple of things about business, because this is called a podcast, because that's what it is. You're now in the podcasting business with your company. How's that going?
Well, we're about to finally debut. We've been building it now for about 9-10 months. And I'm safe to say that this will be the first public announcement that I'm making is on your show.
Nice.
But we're looking at a launch date coming up within about 5-6 weeks with what we're calling it, the Brady Bros. And these are two members of the Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch. I better get that right. And Chris Knight and Barry Williams are going to co-host a program with us.
That's very basically cool.
They're going to recap old Brady episodes, talk about the relevance to today, their recollections of everything, how it affected people they know, how it affected them. It's going to be a really, really fun run. I'm excited about it.
That's cool. Is that a once a week or to be determined?
Yep. It's going to be once a week and probably about 30, 40 minutes at a pop. And we've already done maybe five in the can and we're just super excited. You know, it's just going to be great. So I can't wait to get going.
Well, let me know when they're ready to talk about it. And last time you were on, we talked about your first book of what's bound to be a Stephen King threatening number of books that you're writing now. Stephen King, who puts out a new book every 3 minutes. It's called For the Love of Radio. It's out and available. Grab it on Amazon or wherever you find it, because it's a great story. And one of the things I really like about it is you got the inside story of radio down completely for all of us who did it. But it's very readable for people who didn't spend a minute in a real radio station.
Oh, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate it. I try to write it in a voice that people could really relate to. There's no, you know, there's no $3 words in there. It's just a narrative about a guy who falls into the media business, then falls on his face over and over again. And the reason being, he's just sort of letting the river take him wherever he wants to go, which is usually not a really good idea. You might want to figure out a way to take charge of your life. And that's where it goes. It's a lesson in living and a lesson in sexual adventure.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in there. I felt like I just felt like I should call you for a hug after I finished reading it. You know what I
mean? Well, you know, a hug usually leads to something else. So we got to watch that.
Well, it did in your book.
I had a lot of fun. There was just a lot of inspiration to the book. I spent, as you know, some time in Chicago listening to books like, Landecker and Lou Jack and Tommy Edwards and all those guys and super CFL guys, and ended up being mentored by my friend Tim Kelly, who was at, you know, CFL, and spent some time at WLS. So, you know, all of my Midwest, you know, upbringing in radio, which was weird because I could hear the stations in Los Angeles on the bounce. You can literally hear. Back then you could hear those stations in Los Angeles, and then to go out there and meet those people really got me entranced in radio, and I'm still in it and I still love it. And I owe a lot to Chicago in that respect.
Keep it alive, buddy. There's only a few of the big brains left and you're one of them.
you're very kind. But yeah, it's For the Love of Radio. Get it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Walmart, anywhere you want to find books.
And when the Brady Bros are ready, they're welcome here on Live from My Office, so let me know.
Oh, hell, man. Yeah, I'm excited about it. It took a while to get this going, but I think we finally found our groove. And it's not easy because, you see, Chris lives here in Los Angeles. And Barry Williams, who played Greg Brady, lives in Branson, Missouri.
Is that right?
He worked as a singer. He's an opening act for, Stone Temple Pilots or somebody. I don't know. Can you imagine that? So having Up With People open for, Ozzy Osbourne. But... But so we had to figure out a way to do it to sound like they were really in the same, you know, room. It's not like me as a guest and I sound a little fuzzy sometimes. I mean, it's really got to sound, you know, right on the money. So we figured out a way to do it, and we're really excited about the results. So I can't wait to display it for the world.
All right, cool. Looking forward to promoting it. It's my friend Ed Mann with The Truth About Los Angeles. How about that for a sub? And thanks for doing Live From My Office.
Oh, I'm always happy to do it, man. Anytime, any place.
Welcome back. Before we get to the charity of the day, allow me to remind you to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast, wherever you're listening right now. They're all at CochranShow.com always, and you can subscribe right there too. In addition to that, Patty Steele mentioned a host of affirmations that have meant a lot in her life. We will post those to CochranShow.com, and you can take a look at the list right there if you like. What else? Well, on those show notes, you'll also have links to my social media, at Cochran Show on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, Steve Cochran Show on Instagram. I hope you'll follow me across social media and let me know where I am. What else? Well, let's talk about charity for a second. So many people have lost their jobs since last March, are struggling to pay the bills, struggling to get by. It's really a tough situation. There's an organization called idealist.org. If you're blessed like I am to be able to do what you want to do and take care of your family in the process, how do you pay it forward? Well, get involved. Wherever you are, you can help build a better world. You can find ways to volunteer, donate, lend a hand in your community and beyond with their COVID-19 action tab. There's a nonprofit guide to remote hiring, onboarding, and management if you're trying to run a workplace in this mess that we're all in. And you can join the global Facebook group to connect with like-hearted people like you. Being an idealist is not a bad thing. As a matter of fact, you're an optimist, and that's a good thing because we need more of that in the world. They got plenty of good ideas for taking action right at the website and ways for you to get involved that you might not even have thought of. Idealist.org. Idealist.org. I recommend it. Go check it out. See if you can help make the world a better place because we've all got to pitch in. As always, I will remind you to mask up, social distance, wash your hands, you, and try not to touch your face or my face if we greet each other. I'll do the same for you. And in the meantime, thank you for listening. We appreciate it very much. Ross Cochran puts it together and gets it done. I'm just the mouth that moves, and I look forward to talking to you when my friend Paul Coit joins us Friday on the next edition of Live From My Office.
30 years plus on the airwaves, you have turned your dial to me. Now you're tuned into my podcast. It's Live From My Office, Steve. From Ithaca, New York, to Carolina South, W. Cochran Steve. From Minneapolis and then Chicago twice, top rated shows achieved. Sit back, relax, and now listen to my show. When or wherever you are, cause you're on the go. A-list celebs with some laughs and great info. Live from my office, the Steve Cochran Podcast Show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No better place to be.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Subscribe and like for free.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Live from my office, Steve.
So glad you're with me. It's Live From My Office, Steve.
Thank you for listening to Live From My Office, a service of Monkey Run Productions. All rights reserved. The podcast is hosted by Steve Cochran, and it's mixed, edited, and produced by me, Ross Cochran. Support the show by subscribing wherever you're listening and by telling your friends about it. Follow Steve on all social media channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And make sure you check out this episode's show notes for relevant information discussed during the conversations. You can also email the show directly at thecochranshow@gmail.com with any questions or comments. And that's the best place to tell us about your favorite nonprofit so we can make sure we mention them on the next episode. Steve is available for corporate speaking gigs. He would love to MC your event. And occasionally, he's funny. Thank you for listening. Head to CochranShow.com for more.